Can I just applaud Ryan Burrow for what he just did?
I do every day.
Did you hear that? That was masterful. Ryan said, yesterday you may have been sweaty, but today you'll need a sweatshirt. I think that's fantastic.
Lots of planning in that statement right there. Oh, yeah. Yeah, since I was laying there in bed last night thinking, how am I going to do this? I'm going to be able to pull this off somehow.
You have to be of the caliber that you are, sir, to pull that off, because your amateur broadcaster tries that. They fail miserably, but you just slid it in like it was no big deal.
That's how we roll.
Boy, yep. Was that fun. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning to you. When do we nap? I brought my little blanket like you used to do in kindergarten.
I'm currently in negotiations with the good people over at Brooklyn and to sponsor a nap hour.
I love
where
it.
We just get to take a nap for an hour and they would sponsor it. We're in talks. Nothing's been definite yet.
Is it wrong that I like days like this during the weekday and then the weekends I want some sunshine and funshine?
Sure. Yeah, this is a day that would lend itself to a nice nap. Why wouldn't you?
I went to take my nice nap when I got home yesterday, and I don't nap much, but my husband has stolen my neck pillow thing that I like to. I go, where the heck? I looked everywhere.
Stealing it as if to say he's been using it and just not returning it.
No, you know what he was using it for? His arm in the car.
This guy.
Can I just get to the bottom of this once and for all? For years, I have heard that Mary naps in her car, but I'm not sure why. Can you please just explain?
Well, I did not nap in the car yesterday because it was too hot.
It was so hot.
Is that decision, Mary, as to whether to nap in your car or in your bed, is it solely based on the temperature, or how do you decide where to nap?
Or if the neighbor's mowing his lawn outside, because my driveway goes right against his lawn, so I don't want him watching me.
Oh. Again, why do you nap in your car?
I don't know. I don't always, but, you know, sometimes, Wendy, I can't make it in the house. I'm so tired from driving home.
Now, that should scare is anyone who lives anywhere near you, Mary, because that means you're driving very tired. Tired at some point.
Well, when I come home from the shift, sometimes I'm very tired, but I really don't nap every day, but, you know, so.
Have you napped in your car anywhere else other than your own driveway? Have you ever napped in your car in the parking lot or anywhere else like that?
Do I have to confess?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, sometimes I at the Sugar Creek golf course parking lot, I didn't make it home. I was so tired.
Wow.
I pulled into the golf course.
Wow.
That is the worst feeling.
Isn't that off? Have you ever done that when you're on a long trip and you had to pull over?
No.
Well,
I just sleep while I drive.
You do? No,
I do not. But it is the worst feeling because
scary.
You crank the music. You try to sing along. You put the windows down.
Drink Diet Coke.
Yes. And like it just nothing works.
Nothing.
And
have you slapped yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hit myself, slap myself, yell out the window.
Yep.
Does anyone knock on your window and say, ma'am, are you okay?
Well, not when I'm driving.
But I mean, when you're sitting there seemingly passed out in a parking lot.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I have to confess to that, too.
This is Mary's confessional.
Yes.
One time I was in a Walmart parking lot.
Yeah.
Somebody was tapping on my window, and I did.
To see if you were alive.
Yes, I did wake up. And
are you Radio's Mary Vandeveld taking a nap in this Walmart parking lot?
I had my MyPillow travel pillow as well. I have that one too.
All right, I am a big napper. When we used to do mornings years ago, I would get 4 hours of sleep a night.
Right.
And then I would take like a 3 or 4 hour nap during the day. And I felt like that sort of worked for me, although my afternoon nap was much better. Because then you can honestly wake up whenever you wake up. But studies have tested a wide range of nap times for most individuals. And I would like to dispute this.
Mm-hmm.
It seems between 10 and 20 minutes of sleep is best.
10 and 20 for your nap?
Yes.
Right.
If you have
Why
a longer
would that
nap...
Be?
Because it just, like, you know, when your computer's acting a little slow, you shut it down and restart it.
Yeah.
And
just need a jolt.
Yes.
That's all I do, 20 minutes. Yep.
That's it.
Longer naps, they say, can cause sleep inertia or periods of grogginess and reduce performance, which is every day for me.
Is it really?
I just... It's so weird. My son had an evening class last night, and he's like, I'm kind of tired. Should I take a nap? And I said, that's up to you, but that's a risk you take, because sometimes when you take a nap, you're not tired enough
when it's time to actually sleep?
No, but it's just like you can't. It's two wakings up in the day.
Yeah, right.
And that's the worst part of the day is waking up. I know the alternative is worse. Not waking up is bad.
But I think that those studies that show 10 to 20 minute naps are best are when you're also getting the proper overnight sleep.
It's got to be. Right?
Because they say we need more sleep, that America is, everything is failing because we don't get enough sleep. I mean, we don't. And we cut corners because if we have things to do, I'll catch up. You can't really catch up.
But the recommendation is 8 hours of sleep.
Or more.
I don't think I've had 8 hours of sleep in my life. I don't think there's ever been one night that I've slept for 8 hours. It's just never happened for me ever.
That's preparing you for your twilight years because... Yes. Honestly, the older you get, it seems like the less sleep you get.
Yeah.
It's like at that point, I know, when you have nothing to do, you're retired, that's when you get up at 5 in the morning.
Right.
How come our clocks and teenagers, there is no way they can get over 8 hours of sleep with the schedule and school starting so flipping early?
Right. And explain Orion's situation. You know, Orion does this thing where he can sleep for a minute or 2 minutes.
I don't understand that. We have to get to the bottom of that.
That doesn't seem possible.
Jim has a nap trick for Mary Vandeveld. Hi, Jim. How's it going?
Very well. Very well. Good morning. Hey, I used to drive a truck a long time ago, and we always had a thing of where you take a $20 bill and you hang on to it in your hand. And you put your hand out the window, and you'll think about losing the $20 more than you will lose your than you will be cognitive of not dropping the 20, and that will give you extra time to drive.
That's so smart.
That's a good one. I'd be worried about my arm being chopped off.
Oh my God! How close do you drive to people?
I don't know, but that's a good one. Yeah.
I would hold it a little inside the car because, boy, if I did lose the 20, or but maybe I'd do a dollar.
No,
I wouldn't worry about that. I'd worry about a 20.
The way Jim described it is perfect because you have something at stake.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
That's your whole day allowance.
I'd be out of all my money would be gone.
If you see any truckers with their arms hanging out,
you know they're tired.
Go grab that 20.
Jim, that's a great idea. I may actually try that. Mary, you should try it.
Okay. I'll
get
try
back
it on my way home today.
Thank you, Jim, very much.
You're welcome. Have a great day, guys.
And you.
That really would work because then your mind is focused on something,
and your
brain is more alert. Yeah. So I'm not going to sleep because I got this 20.
I've never heard of that before, but I like it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
We have another trick. Let's take a quick break. And these are tricks how to stay awake when you're driving, which is kind of important to do here in Chicago.
I would say, yeah. All right, more ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I forgot my last name for a minute. I almost fell asleep because it's a perfect nap day. Mary Vandeveld sometimes is so tired on her way home, she has to pull over and sleep.
In her driveway or a local golf course, either or.
I can't believe if you've made it to your driveway, you can't just push yourself for 50 more steps.
No, she's that. Mary gets that tired. It's not an option.
Sometimes the husband's in the house and you don't want to go in there, you know.
Somebody says there is something to be said for no one around. You do get a deeper sleep.
Yes.
You know how they have those front shades for your windows to keep the sun off your dashboard?
Yes.
Put your front shade on the front window and baby shades on the side windows makes a perfect hidey hole for naps.
Is that from somebody named Heidi?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
The falling asleep while driving is really a serious issue.
Horrible.
And sometimes you just cannot help it. You do have to pull over because you just can't stay awake. So we had a listener who called and said, hang a $20 bill out your window so you're gripping it and then you're focusing on that so your brain stays alert and you're focusing more on that than falling asleep.
Right.
Someone said $20 out the window means only one hand on the wheel.
Yeah, that's where it gets a little dangerous.
Don't you sometimes have one hand on the wheel?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's worse if you fall asleep.
Yes, it is.
Tina has a trick. Hi, Tina.
Hi there.
Have you fallen asleep while driving, or you've definitely felt that way, haven't you?
I have not. First of all, I love your show. But my daughter and son-in-law were driving back from Florida about a year and a half ago, and my son-in-law started falling asleep, and seeing as how they were on a road trip, they had bought car snacks, and one of them was a bag of Twizzlers. And every time he started a doze, she'd reach across and slap him with a Twizzler.
And then he could eat it.
And then he could eat it, and he stayed awake, yes. He was angry, but he stayed awake.
Why doesn't
duty.
Twizzlers use that in their marketing campaign? I think that's a great way to sell more Twizzlers.
I think you're right. I think you're right, Bill.
I love it.
Tina,
have
thanks.
A good day.
Thank you, too.
I have a taste for Twizzlers.
We usually bring Twizzlers on long trips a lot because they're good to eat.
Yeah.
You know what the best traveling treat is? A corn nut. I got to tell you.
Why would that be?
Because they're just loud and crunchy, and they're just, that's the only time I have corn nuts.
And they make your breath smoke so good after.
Yeah.
I'm driving. Yeah. Who cares?
I go with the Boston baked beans. Love them.
You're the only person I know.
They're the best.
Who eats those?
What?
I mean,
kidding?
I like combos. Pepperoni.
Oh, there's your breath.
Yeah.
Oh, those are awful.
All right, Dave wants.
You guys are all terrible. I just wanted to. We're all awful.
Hi, Dave. How are you? Are you awful?
She said, no, I'm not awful.
Good.
I have a great tune for Mary Vandeveld when she gets in her car to come home and just turn this up and really crank it. It's called Driver's Seat, and it's by a group. It's a
Sniffing
group
the Tears.
Sniffing the Tears. And all she has to do is just crank it as loud as it can go, and it'll keep her awake.
Do I know that
yes,
song?
Yes, you do.
What is that? You knew it well, Wendy. Why do you know it so well?
We played it on rock radio all the time.
So the idea there is that it's just such a loud song that there's no way you could sleep to it. Is that why?
That and then just a beat to it. It's a constant beat.
Oh.
It's just you can't get it out of your head.
Oh. Wendy is currently trying. Here it is.
You know the song.
Yeah.
Ringing a bell, though?
Yeah, now I know it. I didn't know what it was called, though.
Long intro here. A little driving on a
Saturday night. Come up, man. And didn't they do a version where they kept just inserting the words Mary and wake up really loud?
Yes.
So she would doze off.
I'm just trying to get to the chorus here. Because this, God, what year was this?
79.
I'm skipping for it. It's coming, I think. But again, if you're tired, you'd sing along, but...
It would still make you sleep, right?
Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
What's a song that would put you to sleep right away? Is there a song that Mary could play if she wants to nap quickly?
Anything by Coldplay.
That was unnecessary.
No.
Unnecessary.
How come I can't get the chorus here? All right, but you get the gist.
Yeah,
Drive
a
seat.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, they
that
just
now.
Keep saying that, right?
Yeah, although I haven't heard it once.
Mary, try the song Moon River. I like that song a lot, but I think for some reason I think that would make you sleep soundly.
Oh, Macarena, that would do it.
Then you take your hand off the wheel because you'd have to do it.
Yeah,
be careful.
The chicken dance would annoy you so much that would keep you awake.
That's a good one too.
Hey, what's going on, Rich?
Okay, I had an idea which I use all the time because I do a lot of driving from Deerfield to Wisconsin. I just carry a pair of long tweezers in my car, and I just pull my nose hairs out. And let me tell you, I don't fall asleep.
Do that,
Works
Mary.
Works out really good.
Wow, that's excellent. Any interesting looks from other drivers ever?
Well, believe it or not, usually it's dark when I'm doing that.
Oh, all right,
usually,
then it's fine.
Usually evening.
Mary, consider that as an option. That's a good idea.
I guess I'd have to go for my chin.
Oh,
you got to get a really good long pair,
though. If those are starting.
Rich,
yeah.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Rich.
Mary, I have to pat you on the back because that's the first thing I thought of because as you get older, you get an errant chin hair once in a while. Sorry it happens.
Yeah.
So you can't get them.
But it just kills me that you just were honest enough to reveal that because every woman thought that.
Well, of course.
Bill is grossed out.
Just a little. That's all right.
I wanted to ask, was it Rich? I wanted to ask him about his ears, if he did it with his ears.
You couldn't do that to
I'm more
ears.
Grossed out by the baked beans.
Boston it's baked beans, the candy, not bushes.
I know. Those kind I like.
All right, these are tips how to stay awake while driving, which, by the way, great. Thanks for playing Driver's Seat. I heard that song. Now I just got the urge to wind it up to about 90 on 53, so if I get a speeding ticket, it's your fault.
It's on us. All right.
So evidently that works.
That's fair.
Hi, Wally.
Hi.
What's your tip?
Hi. tie one of your shoelaces real tight while you're working or driving, and when it gets too uncomfortable and unbearable, loosen it up, tie the other shoe as tight as you can, and back and forth, and it'll keep you awake, pulling over and driving at the same time. You know, the shoe keeps you awake because of the...
It hurts.
Yeah. So you got something to keep you awake and swear it, and nobody will hear you.
What about
Wendy can relate to that?
You don't want to tie your shoes while driving, though.
No, you pull over. Pull that's over. What Wally said.
The car. You know,
if you're going to pull over, you might as well go to sleep.
Stop the car. I got one more thing for you, Bill.
Yes. Can hardly wait.
I'm here.
Somebody dying. You're talking about celebrities that died while they were working.
Yes.
Franklin McCormick.
Did he? Of WGN radio fame.
Yeah, he died while he had a heart attack while he was on the radio.
I didn't know that.
I was working at International Harvester at the time with the computers at 401 North Michigan.
Yeah.
And we used to listen to him on the midnights.
Well, and how about Franklin that?
Were you listening when it happened?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
How did they, like when it was happening live on air, how did they get around that?
Yeah, live on air, and, you know, somebody sat in the seat, and, you know, they're saying, well, he's sick, and you could hear the sirens coming in the background.
Oh, my God.
Then you find out later on that, you know, he died.
That's true.
As we were getting off of work, you know, work at midnight.
Yeah.
You had somebody on, and you were talking a while back about people dying at work.
Yeah,
celebrities.
Book. Yes,
and,
yes.
Yeah, but Franklin McCormick.
I had no idea. Wow, Wally, thank you so much for that information. I appreciate it.
Okay, I'm going to charge you a shave for that one.
Right, that's fair. That's fine. Thanks, Wally.
Thank you, Wally. Wow, now that's good live radio.
I didn't know that. Yeah, you'd be very
breaking
compelled
news as
to
it happens.
Find out how that story ends. I had no idea that was the case. I don't think we mentioned that in our Walk of Fame tribute to him.
No, but we have to look into that.
Yeah. All right.
The shoestring trick will not work for Mary because if she pulls over, she'll fall asleep.
That's what
it's
I
true,
thought.
Isn't it, Mary?
Yeah, if I'm going to pull over, I might as well take a nap.
All right. But so what did we learn? We learned that you have to hurt yourself in order to stay awake. That's really the only way to do it.
It seems the only way to pull that off is to, cause yourself
some harm. Or the $20 bill one.
Harm.
That was a good one.
Yeah. You're going to try that, aren't you? Will you report back to us?
I don't think I have a 20 on me.
Bill has one.
Got one?
Yeah, I got paid today. I
mean, yeah, but she won't care about losing Bill's 20.
No, it's not as much pressure.
Just throw that one right out the
window. That's a good point.
Later on in the show, not now, but as the show progresses, Dr. John Duffy and Heidi Stevens will be joining us. That's at 11:05. At 11:35, a friend of the show, WGN's own Larry Potash, is on to talk about his other project that he works on over at WGN-TV. So all that's coming up later on in the show.
Live in Chicago. I live in Chicago, and you got to be a Bears fan. There's no other way around it.
Yeah, all right.
Jarrett Payton is on the line with us. Jarrett, explain this to me. Why are the Bears playing in London?
Well, it's a part of what this league has been doing over the last few years of being able to have this game across the pond, and I think the NFL game has totally grown. I mean, we're talking about not just regular football. Fantasy football has really kind of, you know, grown and expanded the game as well. So you have a lot of people across the world that are now football fans, and it gives them an opportunity to be able to see it live and in person overseas. So a lot of Bears fans that I've talked to, you guys, are making the trip.
Yeah.
And listen, if I wasn't covering the game, I don't know if I would dip into my pocketbooks like that to get those expensive flights. But Bears fans travel, and there's a lot of fans, especially overseas, that the Bears, when they went over there back in the 80s, they had an opportunity to see that great team and became football fans. So it's going to be a great treat for them.
So among the people of England, Jared, would you say that most of them, if they have an allegiance to an NFL team, it's the Bears, or is it split up a little bit?
I mean, I think it's split up a little bit. I think the Bears are one of the main teams just because they're, you know, one of the charter franchises, and I think that's where a lot of it comes. But I was going back and looking at pictures, man. It's so crazy because when my dad was over there, he was at a practice, and Phil Collins came to the practice and brought his son to get an autograph, and Phil Collins wanted to meet my dad, and there's like video of it, and I have pictures of it. It's like,
what?
That's excellent.
Yeah, man.
Did your dad say, yeah, I don't care anymore, get out of here, I'm not giving him the autograph?
It's crazy to think about how all that kind of transpired, and it also makes me think about that my dad was like a true rock star back in those days, man.
Oh,
like,
he totally, you know, was. Like,
totally with his Jerry curl and his headband, a pretty cool moment.
Jared, how do they decide which teams are playing in London? Are all the teams going to get there and play one time at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
Yeah. I'm not really sure of how the whole process goes with the NFL about choosing it, but I know that you see teams like Jacksonville, who's been over there a lot, and Allen Robinson, who is now a Chicago Bear, was with Jacksonville. He's played over there, the Raiders. I think it's really just, I'm not sure, but next time that I am with Roger Goodell, and that will be at the Super Bowl when we give out my dad's award, I'm going to ask him that question, Wendy, and I'm going to find that out for you.
Perfect. Jared, because the British are such polite people, don't the players have to ask permission before they tackle each other during the game?
Yeah, it's really, really hard. Yeah. They're trying to implement that while they're over there.
Yep.
Could you imagine that? Like Khalil Mack having to, you know, say something to the quarterback before he sacks. I am going to sack you right now, and
with
I'm going
permission.
To force a fumble.
Right.
Yes, with your permission.
Sure.
Cheese and crumpets.
All right, Chicago Bears take on the Oakland Raiders, and the game is Sunday. What time is it happening here?
It's in the morning sometime. It's early, so you're going to have to wake up. And I'm thinking I don't have the actual time.
We'll try and find that out.
I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to get on this plane tomorrow in the morning, get there at nighttime. I get there at 10:40, probably at my hotel about 1 a.m., and then have to work the next morning. Like, my whole schedule is like going to be all messed up.
Sure.
But I'm looking forward to it because I think that this is a great time for this Bears team after the win against Minnesota. Got a divisional win, and now you get a chance to go overseas. And I think the Bears, especially their defense, is clicking on all cylinders. So I think it's a great time for them. And offensively, without Mitchell Trubisky, it's going to be the Chase Daniels show to be able to see what he's going to be able to do and how he ran that offense when he came in for Mitch. Can they keep that up? Because I wrote about this. If the offense can score some points, this defense is good enough right now to win a championship the way that they're playing. So hopefully the biggest thing for this team is to go get a win, but to be healthy on their way back across the pond when they come back here to Chicago.
Jared, we discussed this with Dave Ennett the other day. Maybe you have a little more insight than we had yesterday, but as Chase Daniels becomes the starting quarterback, who is now the second string quarterback? Do we know that?
Yeah, I mean, the other day it seemed like on Sunday it was going to be Tariq Cohen if something went down. Yeah, he would be the guy that would have to manage this place. But that's that is a big situation, and I think that the Bears are going to have to kind of figure all that out. But I know for right now with Chase, he has really given this Bears offense a lot more success by his knowledge of Matt Nagy and his system,
yeah,
and seeing how he works through it. I'm in awe of seeing how this all is going to play out, because if he goes out and throws for 300 yards or something and a bunch of touchdowns and Mitch is ready to come back, what is Matt Nagy going to do, and how does he make that change? I mean, you don't lose your job because of injury, but also, too, I think the understanding with this organization is if this offense can be a little bit better and clicking a little bit better, that gives them an opportunity to get to that postseason, and hopefully that end goal, which is to a Super Bowl in Miami.
All right, in 1986, there was a preseason game. Is that the one your dad was at Wembley Stadium?
Yes.
They were up against the Cowboys. And then in 2011, the Bears beat the Buccaneers 24-18 at Wembley.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, are we feeling hopeful?
Yes, I'm feeling hopeful. I mean, this is a game that this Bears team should win. You got Khalil Mack going up against his old squad, so you know he's going to want to be able to prove to everybody in John Gruden that they made the wrong decision. I still want to send John Gruden a Christmas present this year, just telling him thank you. Thank you again for giving Mack to us. But yeah, this is a game where you have to go win, but it is a little bit different for these guys to travel overseas, and it's a little bit different with their schedule and how they have to go about getting ready for this game. And just to see how that goes on, some of the guys like Allen Robinson, Khalil Mack, who have been over there before, some of these guys haven't been overseas, so it's going to be an adjustment for them. And just to have some guys with veteran experience, I think that's going to give them an opportunity to really tell them how to manage your time while you're over there, you know, your sleep patterns, all that stuff, to get ready to play a big, huge game on Sunday.
Pardon me, I know you said this, that you get there late at night and then you have to get there early. I don't know what time the game starts local time in London, but it airs here at 12 noon, so...
You don't have to get up that early, you guys.
Yeah, but you do. That's going to be an early game. I don't know what the difference is. Is it 6 hours or something?
I think so. Wendy, I have no clue, man. my wife just put that I'm going to London on my schedule, and I just get my bags ready and I go. I mean, it's just so simple for me. Thank you to my wife; she's the best. But I look forward. My son says he wants to come with me. Yeah, my son wants to come with me in my suitcase, but I don't know if that is. I told him I would probably go in my suitcase. He could sit in my seat and have all the free soda he can have all the way over there.
6 p.m. London time. I'm sorry. I don't know why I think it's earlier, but we can watch it. We can stream it. It's happening noon on Sunday. The Bears facing the Oakland Raiders in London. Hello.
Hello. Instead of the T formation, they'll be in the T and Crumpet formation.
I like that, Bill. I like that.
Jared's going to steal
use that for my writing.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm gonna use that. That's awesome.
You could also refer to them as the Paddington Bears just for 1 week if you want to. That's up to you.
That's awesome.
Come on, we didn't know what was going to happen last week, and they took that game. So, you know, hope, it's all we have, Jared.
One game at a time, you guys. That's what we have to do. Let's make it happen.
All right, have a safe trip, and enjoy yourself, Jared.
All right, I will, guys. Take care. I'll talk to you when I get back.
All right, perfect. Jared Payton.
Going to London.
I wonder if there, you know how there are some sports that are more popular in England than they are in the United States? Like cricket's a good example. If I sat and watched a cricket match, I would have no idea what I was watching. I wonder if it's a similar situation there when they're watching the NFL, if they kind of understand it, but there's so many parts they don't understand, I wonder.
Let's call random London numbers after the game on Monday.
Can I tell you what the dirty little secret is, I think?
Yeah.
I think they're all Americans who are going to these games. I think it's all transplants from L.A. and San Francisco and Chicago who are going to be in this game.
It very well could be.
And if you're a Bears fan, guys, come on, guys. If you're a Bears fan and you're planning on going to London at some point in your life
perfect timing.
It is perfect.
Yep. It's just strange that the Bears are in England, the Blackhawks are in Prague. Where is everybody?
Let's go to Berwyn this weekend.
It's wide open. More show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to call or text us. Chicago got a lot of attention last night on the late night comedy shows, on The Daily Show and on Stephen Colbert's show. Can you guess why?
Is it something different than this, than that's been talked about before? Like,
it's not something you and I. Well, it's an event that just took place a couple of days ago, and there's footage of it. So they showed the footage of it.
The food cart.
Yep, they showed it like crazy on the late night talk shows because it's like the most bizarre thing. The guy who quickly sprung into action and took a vehicle and rammed the beverage cart is being hailed as a hero. And I think he is, because that thing just so narrowly missed an airplane. And who knows what happens if that hits.
Catering cart causes chaos.
Yes.
That's a great headline.
Yes.
Because it really did. Well, good. I'm glad we're famous for something other than Al Capone.
And Oprah. You've seen the footage of this, right?
It's pretty incredible.
It all happens so quickly. I mean, luckily, we now live in a world where somebody's videotaping at all times, so you get to see it almost from start to finish. But it's so interesting to watch the workers there at the airport kind of getting out of the way, trying to figure out what their next move is. And this one guy, Jorge, just goes, enough of this. I'll take care of this. And he does.
He's the hero. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. And then what happened? Did they have to get another stocked cart? Because you wouldn't have drinks and stuff on that flight then.
I would imagine. The other weird footage from yesterday did not happen here, but at the Chanel show, the fashion show in Paris, did you see the woman? They're doing a full-on fashion show, and it's a runway situation where all these models are wearing their model outfits, and they're walking up and down the runway, and a woman in the audience just decides she's also going to be in the show, so she takes to the runway, and then Gigi Hadid decides, oh, no, you're not. This is what we do for a living.
Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, no, you didn't. Come on, you should have done that.
So she just convinces the woman peacefully at first to not be in the show anymore. She just kind of corrals her off the runway, but then there were more problems afterwards. This woman got very, very violent.
How do you crash the stage and just get up and start walking? She had a cute outfit on, I'll say that.
Yeah, she dressed for it. You know, if you're going to crash a runway fashion show, you got to look like you're part of the show. When you see the footage, it's really strange because she's kind of just, she's sitting in the audience just kind of taking the show in. And then I don't know if she thought that she could just blend in as such that nobody would notice that she wasn't one of the models. She looked like a model. I mean, she was dressed nicely. Her hair was in great shape.
She had a nice strut going.
Right.
She did blend in other than she crawled up on the stage midway.
That was
midway.
The part I would say to her, if you're going to do this in the future, you have to figure out another entrance point. Because that was the part, I think, that made everybody realize this isn't the way it's supposed to be.
Does this change anything when you find out? The New York Post is reporting that the crasher is Marie Benaliel, 28 years old, best known for this podcast or something. She's a comedian.
Oh,
she has 227,000 YouTube subscribers, 196,000 followers on Instagram. She has a one-woman show that runs in Paris at the Comédie des Champs-Élysées.
Oh, yeah.
So that makes more sense to me now. Like, she told her YouTube viewers, hey, listen, I'm going to do this. No one's going to notice. You'd think Gigi could have waited till she got off stage to make...
I think for some of the models, it was like, hey, this is our territory. You can't ruin this. This is our big Chanel show. Please don't do it. But if you're her, you say to yourself, I've seen people like Borat do similar things and get a lot of attention, and it's worked well for them. So let me give it a shot and see what happens. But it's so weird because you see the other models on the runway not wanting to disturb it.
Right.
And then finally, Gigi Hadid goes, enough of this. We're not playing by your rules.
I am too scared to do anything outrageous like that. Aren't you?
I don't know. I guess if you're her and you say to yourself, I'm going to get so much attention and that's good for my business because then people will be talking about it, then maybe I kind of understand it. But it's disrespectful to the... You know what a champion I am for these models in France, Wendy.
Yes,
I've gone out
of
my way in the past. So, it didn't end well.
All right. Dr. John Duffy will be on with us along with Heidi Stevens. He's a clinical psychologist, and she writes for the Chicago Tribune. And we're going to talk about a pretty heavy issue, and that's coming up after the 11 o'clock news.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.
All right, we're going to get serious here on the Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder Show. We have a couple of guests in the studio. Every other Wednesday, we have Dr. John Duffy, a clinical psychologist, author. Your new book is out and about.
It is, yes.
What's it called again?
I'm so nervous when people ask me this because I'm afraid I'm going to choke on it, but it's Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. There's a very long subtitle. Please don't ask me to quote it.
It's the only book I know, John, where the title is longer than the book.
It's a few words longer than the book.
That's all right.
And Heidi Stevens is here as well. And Heidi, I read you in the Chicago Tribune all the time. You guys actually do a podcast together as well.
We do.
And there's something specific that you guys had on your Facebook pages, a column you wrote. I'll hand it to you right now.
Yeah, you're talking about yesterday, the Channing Smith story. Yeah, so it was just a terrible story about a 16-year-old boy from Tennessee who died by suicide on September 23rd. He had shared some intimate messages with another boy, a classmate of his, and the messages got leaked, and some classmates put the messages on Snapchat and Instagram. And when he found out that these messages were public, he shot himself.
And he couldn't bear to think about what his peers thought of him because of that. Is that pretty much it?
That's the understanding. Yeah, his brother wrote a really, really poignant, heartbreaking plea on Facebook for this to become a teaching moment for his peers and for parents, that, you know, his brother decided that dying would be better than facing the bullying at school, probably because he was being outed, you know, as he had not come out before that. And he had been teased at school. One of his classmates told BuzzFeed News he had been teased at school before because he talked in a girly voice, I think was the quote, and walked with sass. So maybe people assumed he might be gay and they were already teasing him. So he had reason to believe that these intimate messages being made public were going to, you know, really sort of be the, add to the scorn and the
I thought kids today understood this better than we did growing up. And there was a time where I feel kids were more inclusive and it's like, you're gay, so what?
That was my first reaction too. I thought, well, that wouldn't happen in the schools my kids go to. Now, I don't know that for sure. And that's maybe a narrow-minded reaction. And actually, what I think John and I tried to do in this column, and when I interviewed Michelle Eichard, this author who I adore, what I hoped that she could do is broaden the scope of the story beyond the homophobia, which is real and which is out there and which probably did contribute to the death of this boy, but into the range of how do we parent our kids with empathy and some gentleness and forgiveness so that when they do something like sext, which a lot of them do, or share, you know, intimate messages that are saying some stuff that they really wouldn't want public, and how do we guide them through that without sort of this shame and embarrassment and message that, like, okay, if you do this, it's going to ruin your life. If you do that, somebody might share it. If you do that, you could get arrested. If someone sends you that, you know, that could keep you out of college. Like, we sort of, I think, because we're all panicked right now about how to parent in this moment with this technology and these stakes that feel so high, I think we go to, like, okay, I'm going to bring up the worst case scenario and I'm going to tell it to you. And I think a story like this one is a reminder that, like, hey, they kind of operate in worst case scenario mode, and maybe don't pile on, because, you know, a kid who's borderline suicidal might feel like this is pushing them over the edge.
Sure. But the trick is, and John, I know you know this because we've discussed this with you in your past, it's part of your role as a parent is that you have to set forth some sort of a guide for your children.
Right.
So then the trick is to do that without overdoing that, right?
And bring John in on this, because your book is amazing, Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. It is a new age. We have to retrain ourselves, as we spoke about before.
We do. There's so much about all of this stuff. And I love this particular story, as tragic as it is, because it shines a light on what we don't know as parents. And we kind of have to learn from our kids' generation. And so this hair trigger reaction, Heidi's right, is to shame our kids and embarrass our kids and present them with, this is the worst thing that can happen. Something legal and awful could happen to you, our family. And so you just can't do this. Not recognizing, oh, this is part of the landscape of your worlds right now. This is part of how you show you're attracted to one another. And even the bullying element of it, with that child, you almost want to get down to, like, okay, so let's talk about what happened here with kids in general who are a little lax with what they post on social media. You know, how do you think the recipient feels about this? And not going straight to shame or straight to massive consequences, but you really want to start from a point of empathy so that kids next time are drawn to act from kind of a deep, honest point within themselves instead of just out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
I think to your point, Bill, because, you know, you are, as the parent, trying to be the voice of reason and the voice of experience and the voice mm-hmm. of, like, hey, stay on a path that doesn't take you to a place you don't want to go. That's your role as a right. parent. I think a lot of us seize on articles like, you know, the death of a 16-year-old boy in Tennessee who doesn't, you know, we didn't know, we probably never would have crossed paths with. Parents seize on those kind of stories and show them to their kids, like, look, this is some of the, this is what I'm talking about. Don't send stuff like that. Someone could share it. Or, you know, don't send, you find a story about someone getting arrested for child pornography, for sexting. Don't sext. This, you get arrested. So I think we think our role is to take those stories and use them as teaching moments and guide our kids. And I think we should, but I think we can't just guide them by scaring them.
And when someone says, don't do it, I'm sorry, there's a rebel inside of me that says, really, don't do it, then I'm going to do it. Our kids are like that, too. And there are parents listening right now that are screaming at the radio going, you're the parent, you tell them what to do, and that's how it goes. That's not how it goes anymore.
Well, no. Michelle Eichard brought up such a good point, and I didn't put this in the column, but she said, if you say to your kid, you know, here's a news story, you send a nude photo, you could get arrested and charged with child pornography. Here's a story. It happened to a kid in Boston. Your kid will hear, yeah, I know 1,000 kids who send nudes and they've never been arrested. Yeah. So, yeah, that poor sap, but you usually don't.
John, you lose your credibility very quickly as a parent when you decide to lecture really hard about something you are not an expert in. And by and large, with stuff like this, your kid is far more the expert than you are. So we're the first generation of parents, I think, where our kids know more about this stuff than we do. So the more we kind of reach out to them and solicit from them what they know. And again, they're not going to tell us every element. Like you said it, Wendy, we're all a little bit rebellious when we're teenagers. So we might not share every element of it with our parents, but if they share a little bit, you know a little bit more than you knew before. Mm-hmm. I think where parents get into trouble is where they walk into a situation like this pretty blind, assume this is just all bad, so I'm going to shame you and embarrass you and frighten you about it. And we get into a corner.
Doesn't seem to be an effective way to do it. Now, I have to ask age-wise. John, I know your son George is older.
Yes.
Bill, your daughters are older.
Early 20s.
I have a 20-year-old who kind of is past this a little bit, but I have a 16-year-old who's right in the middle of this. What age range of kids are we talking about that we should discuss this with, either of you?
It's probably alarmingly young when we start this stuff. So, you know, I think parents need to start talking to their kids about this kind of thing as early as 9 or 10 or 11 years old. So if we think we're going to wait till adolescence or maybe a little bit beyond that and protect our kids from some of this stuff, really young kids are aware of issues like sexting. They know it happens. Sometimes they do it. I talked to a 10-year-old girl recently who was saying some kids in my fifth grade class are sending nudes. She was very open about it. It felt very, very normal to her, normal enough that she was sharing it with me, you know, and this was not in a therapeutic setting. This was in a
Jeez.
Different setting. Yeah. So
I'm so behind the times. I never would have suspected that.
Most of us are. Yeah, most of us have a lot to learn about
John,
this.
John, there was a story a year ago, and I think we talked to you about it. A boy and a girl that were freshmen in high school, and they liked each other, and the boy asked the girl to send pictures, and she wouldn't, and he said, if you don't send me the pictures, there's dozens of other girls that will. We're done. We're broken up if
right.
you're not going to send me pictures. That's a crazy kind of pressure that's so unfair, but it's not that out of the ordinary anymore, is it?
No, it's not out of the ordinary. And this is another part of Heidi's conversation with Michelle that was really important because we have to get down to what's motivating our kids. What do they think this is all about? Because
yeah.
for young kids today, this was kind of handed to them, right? This
yeah.
whole idea of sexting. And so it's part of the fabric of relationships. And kids believe that this is part of the fabric of intimate relationships.
Yeah.
And so this is how you get close to somebody, is you ask for nudes or you provide nudes. And so it's important to get your kid thinking about, like, and doing a gut check about, does this feel right? Does this feel like me here? Is this something I'll feel better about tomorrow or worse about tomorrow if I ask for this or if I go ahead and do this? And I think if our kids are acting out of an internal sense of what feels right and what doesn't,
mm-hmm.
we're getting far further down. We're moving the needle better than if we're just acting as parents and lecturing.
Don't you feel old?
Yeah. I do.
And out of touch.
Yep. Wait, Heidi, hold that thought because we have to take a quick break.
Okay.
More with John and Heidi. We're at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Dr. John Duffy is in studio with us. Heidi Stevens is in studio with us. Heidi, if you wouldn't mind, just a quick overview about the story that got this discussion started.
Yeah, so a 16-year-old boy from Tennessee, Channing Smith, died by suicide a couple weeks ago after some intimate messages he shared with another boy were made public. And so we're talking about sort of the parenting lessons to draw from that. Not that you want to turn someone's life into a teaching moment, but, you know, in his honor, can we find a kinder, gentler way to parent and deal with our kids and some of the really tough stuff they're trying to navigate?
Can I throw another strange angle? I'm not defending whoever exposed this kid and put these notes online. I'm not defending them.
Yeah.
But think about what their life is like for the rest of eternity, that what you did cost somebody their life.
No, I'm so glad you said that because it's all of a piece, right? I mean, if we are going to talk to our kids in a way that helps them pause and check their gut and think about long-term consequences, not just in a legal sense or a will this threaten my scholarship sense, but in a like, what sort of human do I want to be sense? Of course, that also includes, do you want to be the kind of person who shares someone else's private vulnerable moments?
Right.
You know, do you want to send that nude? Do you want to take that nude and share it with someone who it wasn't intended for?
Mm-hmm.
All of those things are the questions that we should be talking to our kids about above and beyond, to me, above and beyond the legal ramifications of
John?
It all.
I've worked with that kid more than once. Boys and girls who have been that online bully or have shared something that was intended to be private that belonged to somebody else. And they tend to be devastated by it. They, you know, the consequences that befall that other child are hardly ever intended. You know, I can't remember a time when it was. I mean, I can remember one or two times where it was like, oh, I think I can make a really, really rough day for her if I post this. But nothing like what we're looking at now, right? You know what I mean? Where kids are so fragile in their self-worth and their self-esteem and their well-being emotionally, physically, and otherwise are super fragile so that, you know, we need to teach our kids to be sensitive to that at the very least.
Mm-hmm. You think back of, you know, junior high and high school, you know, your first breakup, it seems life-ending. It really does. Everybody's mm-hmm. had that heartache. Why has that feeling of it's never going to get better intensified with kids today?
I'll say this. You know, for kids today, it feels like it's never going to get better. It is very hard to get that mindset in. Like, I've had this wealth of experience in my life, and so I know what it feels like for something to get better. At 13, 14, 15, 16, you don't have that experience to lean on. And as parents, sometimes we'll tell our kids, oh, don't worry about it. It gets better. Believe me, this will be your first breakup, and you won't even remember this a decade from now. But that doesn't play on the mind of a kid. You know, in a kid's mind, it is awful right now, and right now is all I can see, you know?
And these are kids who already are walking around with the prospect of school shootings and climate change and constant sort of panic-inducing messages that we're handing them and not really doing a whole lot to solve, right? So they're walking around with a head full of stuff that we just weren't walking around with.
So when people say, when they talk about these kids and they, you know, these kids are so coddled, we're treating
right.
them so
Snowflakes.
Carefully. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you respond? What's the response to that?
I have a pretty strong response to that, to be honest. I think it's really, really difficult to be a kid today with so much pressure coming from so many different areas, socially, social media, academic pressure, stuff like this that you can't necessarily anticipate moment to moment and day to day. Making it through the day is the grit and resilience for a kid. You know, making it through the day successfully, maybe doing well on a test, maybe connecting well with somebody, even better. But, you know, I think it's more difficult than it's ever been to just be a kid making it through the day. So I give kids credit just for that. I don't know that we need to test them with a whole lot more in order for them to prove they're capable.
Yeah.
Heidi and I were talking off the air. If your kid is experiencing a problem, you want to be supportive. You want to help them solve the problem so they can move forward. But I'm sorry, in this day and age, don't you want your kid to stay alive?
Right. Exactly.
I mean, it gets scary at some point where you mentioned, John, that, you know, a problem they're having right now, they don't see the tomorrow. They don't see the other side of the problem because they haven't experienced it yet.
Right.
And I think we can argue whether it's harder to be a kid today or not. And there are people, as you said, listening right now who are rolling their eyes. But I think that we can also look at data and we can look at the fact that the suicide rate is higher than it's ever been.
The suicide rate is higher
than it's ever been since the government started collecting data. So we can say, okay, it's not any harder now. It's easier. Well, okay, but the numbers don't lie.
Right.
I mean, kids are deciding to kill themselves at a rate that we have never seen before. That's just a statistic.
So to be proactive, what do we do so that in 25 or 30 or 40 years, it's not twice as bad as it is now? Mm-hmm. How do we figure that out?
Yeah, I think it requires a different approach from us, from parents. And if we approach our kids initially from a, tell me about that. Tell me a little bit about what that's like for you. Tell me how that feels to you. And I know there's probably more listeners rolling their eyes right now, but this is currency for kids. This is emotional currency. And it tells them without telling them, hey, you can come to me. You can lean on me emotionally. You can talk to me about anything. That doesn't mean there's not going to be a consequence. That doesn't mean I'm going to be thrilled with everything you have to say, but we're still good. You can still come to me. And I think if we start to set that vibe as parents more and more, kids become more and more resilient and they realize, okay, I have some allies out there I didn't know I had who want to understand, even if they don't right now. I can go to my parents and I can talk to them about this stuff. I don't have to go to another 14-year-old and expect him or her to be an expert in mental health and my well-being.
I also think as many times as you can say, you know, this is so normal, like this thing you're going through is so incredibly normal. I mean, that was the point Michelle made about the, you know, we hear sending news or we hear sexting and we think, oh, deviant and oh my God, not in my day. And oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. And she said, these are young, tender humans trying to figure out sexuality and who they like and what kind of person they want to be in a relationship. And that is so normal. So we see the behavior and we think deviant and terrible and bad. But if we look at what's underneath the behavior, and if we can talk to our kids about that, like, hey, what you are grappling with and trying to figure out right now, every single kid in the world is, right? If we can make them feel just so utterly normal and on alone in this hard thing, I think that's John knows way better than I do. I don't have a degree in any of this, but I feel like that has to go a long way.
And John, I just want to interrupt and then you can have the final word here. You're a psychologist. You deal with these kids. You do this for a living. You know how to. How does that feel? Tell me about it.
Yeah.
We as parents don't know how to do that as well.
I know. And my goal in a lot of families is to put myself out of business in a lot of ways. You know, the ability to give the kid a wide enough berth to say, to let them know, hey, this is normal and you can talk about this. I'll hold this for you and you can go on and live your life. You know what I mean? That is so crucial in the life of a kid. And that's really all that happens in therapy rooms when you're working with, you know, tweens and teenage kids. And so the more of that we do as parents, the better off our kids are going to be emotionally, no doubt.
Thank you to both of you. Dr. John Duffy is a clinical psychologist. He's everything, an author, Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety.
You're everything, John.
So many things.
That's a compliment.
It's available
now. New manager
now
of the Cubs.
on Amazon. Barnes & Noble. Do you have any appearances coming up? Because you do speak to parents.
I do. I'll be at Nazareth Academy tomorrow. I will be at Anderson's Bookstore on Tuesday.
Heidi, it's hard to top being everything, but you've got some pretty decent credits.
You're pretty close to everything.
You're a lot of things, Heidi.
Columnist, mom, someone who cares, and both of you together, your podcast is called
On Purpose.
And we are trying to be better parents. I got to tell you, I didn't know it was so hard to be a parent. I might have stayed on the pill longer. I don't really know how that works.
Wow. That's interesting. Hope the boys are listening, Wendy.
They're not listening.
They're not? All right, good. That's safe.
Well, it's just a different time. And again, we're all just trying to learn. That's what we're trying to learn and not judge others. That's all I'm going to say.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Left, it's Wendy Snyder, and there is a new show. It's not that new, actually, but it's a show on TV that I am loving more than anything. And the guy behind that show is Larry Podash. Larry, what's going on?
Hey, guys, how are you?
We're fine. Can we quickly throw you a compliment on the anniversary show from a few weeks back?
Oh.
Very entertaining.
Thanks. Yeah. For the first time, we actually went into our VHS files to put them in our computer system. So thankfully, we'll never have to do any of that ever again.
What do you think about Larry when you see a very young Larry Podash when those clips are shown? What is your gut reaction to that?
Well, unlike when we were all 25 and we'd look at 50-year-olds and say, gee, these people are freaking old. Now I know what 25 years is, right? Wow, just a lot of bad hair and bad outfits.
Yeah, but they weren't bad back then. That's all I'm saying, because I partook in that as well.
Yeah, we also thought it was funnier back then, but the passage of time, hopefully we've grown wiser.
So I am loving Backstory. Season 4 premieres this Saturday, October 5th, 10 p.m. WGN-TV. You basically give us the backstory, hence the name. I love what you're doing with this.
Well, thanks. It's as you know, in news, you get to do 90 seconds of a news story. So we do like 7, 8, 9, 10 minute pieces, and I find that most people can give you a line or two from a Wikipedia page about whatever chapter of history, and we try to go a little bit deeper. So I have a lot of fun doing it because I love stories, and to me, I love them more when they're factual, they're real, they're part of our history.
Who comes up, Larry, with the ideas for the stories? Is that your idea, or you got a staff doing that?
No, the staff is me and a photographer named Mike D'Angelo, and we get a little bit of help, but mostly it's I've got a file full of ideas I'll never get to, but it was fun to go to Boston, my hometown, and do the Salem witches and to do the Revolution and to do 19th century spiritualism and all these things I kind of grew up with, and I got to know a little bit more about it than I did on those field trips back in sixth grade.
All right, so besides you're returning to your hometown in Boston, or is it technically Lynn, Massachusetts?
Yeah.
What else do you have coming up this season?
Well, the first episode is really interesting because it's about a guy who's a salvage guy, and he goes to this old house and he realizes, oh, my competition kind of beat me here and took everything. So he goes up to the attic to try and find something. He sees a bump in the insulation. He lifts it up, and he finds all this broken glass that he puts together like a puzzle and discovers that this is a family story that involves Hitler and a political assassination, and he uncovers this great story. So I'm excited about that, and also talked to a kid who started a Rolling Stone newsletter out of his bedroom back in the 70s and was able to get into the inner circle of the Rolling Stones. And isn't that cool when you're a big fan of a particular band or something and you get to hang out with them?
That's a dream come true.
I'm
sorry.
It wasn't all fun and games, as he learned.
I'm still trying in my head to put together the broken glass and how that could lead to Adolf Hitler, but I guess that's a good tease for watching the show, isn't it?
Yeah, the staff jokes that like 70% of my backstory stories all involve Hitler somehow.
Oh, that's quite
a
percentage.
That guy was everywhere.
Yeah, I guess.
That guy was everywhere. All right, I'm sure there are people listening right now or people that watch Backstory and have some ideas for you. Do you take suggestions from the audience?
Oh, absolutely. That's where I get some of my best ideas sometimes. One of them someone gave me at a cocktail party, the missile silos that are all over Chicago, and people don't even know. They meet bicycling right on top of one and not even know it. So we take a look at that. But if they want to email me or hit me up on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, I love getting them.
Can we go back, Larry, for a second to the witch one that you did in Boston?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but back then they would test you for being a witch. They would throw you out of a boat, and if you floated, you were a witch, and they would kill you. But if you sank, you weren't a witch, and you would die from drowning. Was that the best way to discover whether or not they were witches, do you think?
No, here's a better one, and I bring this up in the story. They would make you a urine cake.
Yeah.
It's a cake.
I had one for my birthday last year.
Yeah, and then they feed it to the dog, and then the dog is supposed to kind of, like, you know, bark at the person who's the witch, whatever. You know, it's just ridiculous. It's just, it's really, when I read the books about the Salem witch trials, even though I had a general idea of what it was about, it was just so depressing and sad that these people, these innocent people, were, you know, were killed over just stupidity.
Was there some hidden agenda that we're not aware of that they were using? Why would they want to put these women through this? It didn't make sense. I don't understand why they would do this to them.
Well, it's a long story, but these people are living in fear from Indian attacks and attacks from the French, and there's disease and there's cold and there's all this stuff going on. And of course, you're living with Puritans, which is no barrel of laughs.
I know.
And it's like they just cracked, and one kid cracked and the next kid cracked, and suddenly they're all cracking. And the next thing you know, everybody's pointing a finger at somebody saying, oh my God, you're a witch. No, you're a witch. And it's a big free for all. And it's really sad. It's a big, like, social, sociology experiment or study, if you will. And the thing about Salem compared to overseas in Europe was Salem was small.
Right.
And so people have been able to study it. And I got to interview one of those people who's been studying it for decades.
You know, if this was old times, Bill, you would point me out to people and say I was a witch.
I have done that. I've done that recently.
And I'd be turned into a urinal cake or something like that.
Yeah.
All right. There's a texter, Larry Potash. We live in Milwaukee, can't get WGN-TV. Can we get the backstory on demand or in some other way? That's a great question.
It live streams on WGNTV.com, so that's one. And the other is they're typically posted online after they air, probably like Monday or Tuesday, and then there's the podcast. Those are wherever you get podcasts. They typically post after it airs on TV. So there are multiple ways to get a hold of it. But thank you for asking. Yes.
Yeah, that's area code 414, and 847 says I've got a herniated disc. That's my bad backstory.
Wow.
He would like to be booked as a guest.
That'd be a wonderful episode. Larry,
sure.
This impression that Pat Tomasulo does of you, what do you like about it and what do you hate about it?
I don't hate anything about it.
No?
I think he's got it pretty on. I think he captures my disdain for my co-anchor. and so it's a multidimensional impersonation that he does. I don't know that my voice is that low, but at least we can tell who's who.
You know, I don't feel like we're all old enough to have been on the air that long. I mean, congratulations on you and Robin and Paul and Pat and everybody else. It's just amazing. I mean,
well, thanks. I feel like we're all at college and we're just like at different dorms or something, you know? Hey, it's Bill and Wendy calling. Let's go have a party.
But the one thing that special did more than anything was it would show how consistently funny you guys are and how you really seem to be enjoying yourselves. And in a business where that's not always the case, you know, you get so many people just kind of slugging through it. You guys are an exception to that rule, and it's so much fun to watch.
Well, sometimes the commercial breaks are more entertaining than the actual air product. But, you know, we're friends, and we kind of identify with each other. We have a similar sense of humor, and as you know, this authentic, you know, social media thing, this is like a big buzzword now, but we were just doing that, always doing that, because that's just who we are. And I think a lot of anchors in our industry, it's like they go to anchor school, and they feel like they got to be a certain way, and boy, in this day and age, when you're competing with the phone, you've got to be able to be yourself, and you know, not this anchor robot. And fortunately, we didn't need the cell phone kicking our behinds to learn that lesson. We just decided that that's just what we're going to do.
Are you kind of surprised, I mean, that you were able and continue to be able to be yourselves? Because when you look at other news stations, no one is having fun and then can turn it right around and be a credible journalist.
Well, there's two things. To WGN's credit, a variety of managers, they let us do it because the ratings are good. And
that's
if the ratings weren't good, they probably would have kept us from doing it. But also, you know, you can see when we started to get some traction in the ratings, you could see the managers telling people over at the other channels, be funnier, you know, start laughing. And, you know, if you're not funny off the air, you're not going to be funny on the air, and you should just do what you do really well and stick with what you do well and play your position. And it's sadly, a lot of our competitors just kind of are reading the teleprompter like they did 35 years ago, and that's good for us, so don't say anything to them.
I won't say
but
a word.
Some of your competitors are the network shows. It's Good Morning America, and it's the Today Show, and you guys are taking those guys down. That's unheard of. That's spectacular.
Oh, yeah. You know, we would all be fired on day one at Good Morning America. Like, they,
yep.
They all those networks, they take themselves very, very seriously. And to them, fun is, well, we're going to cook a tuna salad today.
Right.
You know, and to me, that's just not why people watch morning news. So, you know, good luck to them.
Yeah. I want to bring back the 25th anniversary primetime special again, because we talked to Pat Tomasulo when an audience member asked, you know, have you done anything that
might get you fired? You thought you might get fired. Yeah.
And my favorite part, you know, Pat had mentioned kind of what it was. And
yeah, I know what you're referring to.
I just love how irritated you got at the very end of the special. That's what I liked more than anything, Larry.
Who, me?
Yes.
Oh, I don't even remember. What did I do?
You were talking about you couldn't say a particular something, but I'm on the air calling Robin this every day. What's the big deal?
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember that. But
it was funny to me. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, Robin is a great sport, and there are not many TV people who would allow themselves to take the pie in the face every day the way Robin does. And it's all meant with love.
Absolutely.
We'll all be watching Backstory, Larry. It premieres this Saturday, October 5th at 10 p.m. right there on WGN-TV. Good luck with that episode and the rest of the season. We're all looking forward to it.
Thanks, Bill and Wendy. Appreciate it. Take care, guys.
Absolutely.
He's on Facebook and Twitter at Larry Potash, or Instagram at Larry underscore Potash. Is that what you say, underscore?
I think you're supposed to say it that way, yeah.
And it's good to know that you can stream those live streams of the Backstory, and also the day after they air. They do encore presentations on WGN-TV, but you can also find it online.
The best part of that end of the show, of the WGN anniversary show, was Pat wanted to answer this audience member's question of what he had said that almost got him fired. And everybody, Larry, Robin, Paul, everybody, stopped him not once but twice, because they knew he could get in trouble for doing it again. That was very noble of all of them to come to his rescue so quickly.
Yeah, but he used the word, a dirty word, at the very end of the show.
Larry did.
Yes.
Yes.
And that, I mean, it's funny, he doesn't even remember that.
I know.
Because that was my favorite part.
Yeah.
All right, more to come. Can we tell everybody who's on the show tomorrow? Because I'm super excited about this.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Henry Winkler will be on with us tomorrow.
I don't know.
Henry Winkler.
Wendy. I don't know what I'd love him in more. He's so good on Barry right now.
Yeah, he plays Bill Hader's acting coach on Barry, won an Emmy Award for it, not this past Emmy season, but the year before. It's his first Emmy ever. He's been nominated a bunch of times. It was his first Emmy. Of course, he was Arthur Fonzarelli on Happy Days. He's been on Parks and Recreation. He's been in a ton of good movies. He's in a movie, and I'll talk to him about it tomorrow, that I still consider to be one of the funniest movies of all time, the movie Night Shift with Michael Keaton.
It's awesome.
His friend Ron Howard directed it, one of Ron Howard's first movie that he directed. And to this day, it holds up as, I think, one of the funniest movies of all time. So we can't wait. Henry Winkler will be on with us live tomorrow.
11:05.
11:05. Wendy, I also have something to say.
Did you forget?
Nope.
Were you boogieing?
Yep. Coming up, tune into WGN Extra and hear us, Wendy and myself, talk about what's hot and what's cold. Sometimes we do it at the same time. It's all sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They're the 60-Minute Men.
I know I said earlier that we are Chicagoans. I'm a suburbanite, but still I qualify as a Chicagoan, as do you.
We both work in the city of Chicago, but live in the suburbs, different suburbs. So I guess, technically, by proxy, we are Chicagoans, although we're not allowed to vote for any mayoral elections in Chicago. Our city stickers on our cars say the respective suburbs we live in. So we are, but we aren't.
So you're trying to dispute everything
no.
I say.
But why would I do that?
If somebody says, where, like if you're in a different country or state, where are you from? Chicago.
More times than not, right?
Yeah.
Because they'll know that right, reference.
We're members of the Chicago metropolitan community.
Yes. Members in good standing.
Yes, we are. But there are things, there's a list of things I have that only make sense to Chicagoans.
Oh.
And I thought we could participate.
Oh. We'll do this on the stream today then?
Yeah.
All right. That'll be great.
You can join us on WGN Extra.
And only Chicagoans can relate to these things?
Well, these are things that only make sense to us.
Oh.
Like, if you go, like, all right, let me give you one, because this is a pet peeve of both of ours.
Yes.
We don't call it Chi-Town.
Never.
We just don't. We don't really call it the Windy City.
Ever.
Or the Second City.
Ever.
I mean, there is Second City
right.
to go to.
Right.
But marketers and advertising
they
agencies sure do.
Yes, they sure
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
Remember that show they had, the New Year's Chi-Town Rockin' Eve or whatever right. it was called?
And
or,
we boycotted it because the name was silly.
Because they were trying to make it Chi-Town.
Right.
We don't,
no one ever called
plain
it
Plain and
that.
Simply, we say Chicago.
Right.
Which
right.
means stinky onion or something of that
right.
ilk.
Why would you not want to say that? That's beautiful.
I have
that's
some.
A very good one. That's a solid one.
How to pronounce the word punchki.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're Polish or not. If you're from Chicago, you know, even though it's spelled P-A-C-Z-K-I, it's punchki.
Right. It looks like pasky.
Right.
But it's not.
Right. Right.
Oh, those are both very good ideas.
I have one that totally relates to you, but I think we should make people wait.
Oh, okay. All right.
Until we get to the stream.
So the deal is this. In a little while, you'll have two options. You can listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch with an usually it's Steve Bertrand, but he's under the weather, Wendy. So John Hansen has been kind enough to come in and fill in. So you can do that, or you can join us on the stream and find out things that only Chicagoans truly understand and appreciate.
That's it. We get it. We're the only ones.
Is this one on there? We've taught you and I have discussed this, that in other parts of the country or the world, that room when you first walk into a house is called a living room, but here in Chicago it's called a front room. And sometimes people's front rooms will be in the back of their house, but they will still call them their front room.
That is not on the list, but Bill, I would like to open it up to the listeners. And there is a different number when we're on our bonus hour, 312-235-2525, 312-235-2525. Please make a note of it.
Please do.
All right, coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo, who is sitting in the Northwestern Medicine newsroom right now on WGN.